The Healer, The Healing Work of Mary Baker Eddy, compiled and arranged by David Keeston. Part 4, Fourth Continuation. Number 91. My mother often related the following experience, which occurred in the Lynn household. I was sick, and my mother called a medical doctor. The physician gave my father a prescription to fill at a drugstore. While he was gone, Mrs. Glover came in. She stopped at the door and listened to my mother's fears about me. Mrs. Glover said, "Put away the medicine. Flora is all right." When my father returned with the medicine, I was playing on the floor, perfectly well. I have been well all my life. It is reported that Mrs. Eddy wrote Science and Health in 2 weeks, writing as fast as possible and dropping the sheets on the floor. Then, in the evening, she would gather them together and put them in order. Then she took up the task of rewriting them. When asked why she had to rewrite them, she replied that she translated from the pure language of spirit, a language unknown to anyone. One asked her to speak in that language, and she did. When asked if she understood, the questioner said, "Not a word." At another time, Adam Dickey expressed approval of what Mrs. Eddy had been writing, and she said, "God wrote that." He replied, "I know He did, for I felt it." Mrs. Eddy said, "I believe you did." Number 92. I was told that one of the early students went to our leader for advice. The student told Mrs. Eddy that she had a claim of sickness and also other difficulties which she had prayed over faithfully and had solicited help of other practitioners, and yet her needs had not been met. She asked our leader to advise her what to do. Mrs. Eddy, so I was told, advised her to read Science and Health through in 1 month. The lady did so and was healed, and her difficulties were all worked out harmoniously. Number 93. In early 1876, a dinner guest of Mrs. Glover's, Mrs. Eddy's married name at the time, was the recipient of a healing and was later to be the instrument in bringing together Mrs. Glover with her future husband. Mrs. Godfrey of Chelsea, Massachusetts, was summoned to Mrs. Glover's house at the request of her nephew, William Nash. Mr. Nash's wife and baby were both ill, and he wished his aunt to come to help him. Mrs. Godfrey, along with her young daughter, were at dinner with Mrs. Glover. Mrs. Glover had meals with her tenants when she noticed the bandaged finger of the genial woman. Upon inquiry, Mrs. Godfrey explained that she had run a needle deep into her finger, and that the doctors told her that should she not amputate the finger, she would lose her entire arm. She refused to consider such actions. The next morning, Mrs. Godfrey ran into the adjoining room, exclaiming to her nephew, "William, look at my hand." The finger, appearing almost normal, elicited a remark from William that it was the result of Mrs. Glover's work. Mrs. Godfrey turned to Mrs. Glover as her only physician. Number 94. Shortly afterwards, on a Sunday in March of 1876, Mrs. Godfrey invited Asa Eddy to come visit and have dinner at their home, and it was at this gathering that Mrs. Glover came to meet her future husband. Mrs. Glover was to heal Mr. Eddy of a complaint, and after his second visit, he was so well improved that he enrolled to take her class of instruction in healing. Number 95. The first encouragement Mrs. Eddy received after issuing the first edition of Science and Health was from A. Bronson Alcott, the writer, who called to see her and said, "I have faith in you." His comment on Science and Health was that it has the seal of inspiration, gives the facts of immortality, and reaffirms the Christian revelations. She afterwards healed him from a severe form of rheumatism, which had confined him to his chair. From Matthew, "For verily I say unto you, that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which ye see, and have not seen them, and to hear those things which ye hear, and have not heard them." Number 96. A carpenter came to our house for some reason, who had his arm in a sling. Father asked him what the trouble was, and he said that he had strained the ligaments and paralysis had set in. The arm was partly withered, and all the physicians said that it would continue to wither. He said that he had been to the best physicians and hospitals there were. Father told him about Mrs. Eddy, and asked him if he went to her to come and tell him the result. About a week later, the carpenter came to the house to tell Father that he was completely healed. I might add that when this man came to see Mrs. Eddy, she was too busy to come down to talk with him, and just opened a window in her parlor room on the second floor and called down to him. Father never told me any details of this experience other than those I have related. But as far as I know, this was the only conversation Mrs. Eddy had with the man, and he came away healed. Number 97. The Nashes, while being tenants of Mrs. Glover's, did not show an interest in Christian Science. They, in fact, had their own doctor and nurse. They did, however, have the highest regard for Mrs. Glover, and even had their little girl named Flora Glover Nash. On one occasion, Mrs. Nash asked Mrs. Glover's opinion about the condition of her daughter, which seemed worse than usual. She didn't take control of the situation or interfere in any way, but only spoke quietly, soothing the troubled thought of the mother. And shortly, everything was all right. From Psalms, "His work is honorable and glorious, and his righteousness endureth forever. He hath made his wonderful works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and full of compassion. He hath showed his people the power of his works, that he may give them the heritage of the heathen. The works of his hands are verity and judgment. All his commandments are sure." Number 98. It was only a few months after our stay with my cousins, early the following winter, that I, Mary Godfrey, had an attack of membranous croup. I had suffered with this all during childhood, and father and mother both used to become very fearful that they would lose me during one of these attacks. But this time, mother was so sure that Mrs. Glover, as Mrs. Eddy was known at the time, could heal me, that she wrapped me up in a blanket and started off to Lynn in a heavy snowstorm, my Aunt Nancy accompanying us to the station. Aunt Nancy kept telling Mother that she was crazy to take me on such a journey on a day like that, and I would surely die. But Mother went right on and finally got me to Lynn. When she reached Mrs. Glover's house, she went straight to the back door so that she could get in more quickly. Mrs. Glover came to the door at once and, as calmly as if nothing was the matter, said that if I would run upstairs and play, I would be all right. I do not remember much about it, except that I did as she told me, for I had been taught to be obedient. I ran upstairs to the Nashes, boarders of Mrs. Eddy's, apartment, and immediately I was all right. That was the end of the awful condition. They stayed at the house that night, and in the morning Mr. Godfrey came over to be with them. Mrs. Glover saw him then and told him that it was his fault that his daughter had had those problems. The little girl was very upset at hearing Mrs. Glover say this to her father, as she thought her father was a wonderful man. Of course, she did not then understand what Mrs. Glover meant, and possibly her father did not either. Mrs. Eddy was alluding that the fear of the parent thought about the child is frequently the cause of the physical problem in the child. Number 99. According to the reminiscence of Alice Swayze Wool, another example of Mrs. Eddy's healing work was accomplished in the following manner. In about the year 1876 or 1877, when Mrs. Eddy was living on Broad Street, Lynn, I was living in Beverly and was very ill with pain in the abdomen, and the doctor had not been able to relieve me. Someone proposed that I go to Lynn to see the medium who healed without medicine. So I went to Lynn to see her. Mrs. Eddy opened the door herself and invited me in. I told her what seemed to be the matter, and she talked with me a few minutes and then said, "Now, we won't talk any more." She closed her eyes and sat with her hands in her lap for about 10 minutes. Then she said, "You will not have that trouble any more." And I said, "Aren't you going to rub me or do anything?" And she said, "You are healed." And I was. Number 100. Mrs. Ellen Linscott told me this. She lived with Mrs. Eddy at the college, Massachusetts Metaphysical College, on Columbus Avenue. And one day a woman called to see then Mrs. Glover. On that day, Mrs. Glover had directed she was not to be disturbed. The woman expressed her regret, saying she was in town only for the day and wished to see and thank Mrs. Glover for healing her of cancer in the throat. Afterwards, when Mrs. Glover was told of it, she said about this, "Oh, I am so sorry not to have seen her." Some time ago, she came and showed me her throat with an awful cancer eating into the jugular vein. The sight was so awful, I turned away and knew in the most positive way that God knew nothing of such a thing. That was all the treatment I gave her. And she quoted the incident in Unity of Good. See reference in epigram at front of this book. Mrs. Linscott said in 1903, "Not long ago, I had a letter from Mrs. Eddy asking me to find out about this woman and the incident that happened 15 or more years ago." Number 101. Mrs. Eddy was called to a case of fever where two physicians were present. They said the man could not live. He had refused to eat anything for a week. As she went to his door, he was saying, "This tastes good, and that tastes good," and he did not have any food in the room. Mrs. Eddy said, "With that consciousness, he can live without eating." The physicians laughed at it. "Well, he can eat," she said, and instantly he was in his right mind, recognized someone in the room, and called for something to eat. They brought him a bountiful supply, and he ate it all, dressed himself, and went out in the yard entirely well. From Psalms. The Lord satisfieth thy mouth with good things, so that thy youth is renewed like the eagles. From Proverbs. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish. Number 102. In January of 1877, there appeared an article in the Ipswich Chronicle titled "Metaphysical Science" by Mrs. Eddy. It read in part, "The tree is known by its fruit, and the fruits of this knowledge are sin, sickness, and death. But the fruits of our opposite discovery and higher perception of spiritual things are health and immortality, in which the material fades out of all calculations of being. This is the only true statement of Christian Science by which we have caused a man with a decayed bone to stand almost instantly on that limb and to be healed. The most terrible distortions of limbs and the most hopeless chronic diseases have yielded at once to our spiritual position. The example placed before us by our blessed Master reiterated this truth that enables us to handle serpents unharmed. We have discovered dormant disease in this mind 3 months before it was reproduced on the body or to mortal consciousness. Also have destroyed disease in this unconscious source, and told the patient he was healed 3 weeks before the body would indicate this fact, and never in a single instance were we mistaken." Number 103. 11-year-old Grace Chowett, her mother, and her infant sister were among the tenants at 8 Broad Street. Mrs. Glover greatly loved the baby and would come downstairs and hold her in her arms. She seemed hungry for children and the affection children expressed. This love of children is a constant theme throughout her life. The little girl had often noticed the sign at 8 Broad Street, which read, "Mary B. Glover's Christian Scientist's home. And she had heard that Mrs. Glover was a doctor. Childlike, she reasoned, "If I must have a doctor, I will go to the lady on Broad Street. The sign shows she is a Christian. And a Christian, even if she is a doctor, wouldn't hurt a little girl." So off she took herself to a room with the crimson carpet and the gilt cornices, where a pleasant-faced lady chatted with her a minute or two, closed her eyes for a few more minutes, then took her hand and said, "If you are not better tomorrow, come see me again." Nothing was said about Christian Science, either by Mrs. Glover or by Asa Eddy, who met the child at the door. But the pain was gone, and the child ran all the way home. "I was filled with wonder," she wrote later, "at the loving kindness of the people who were so good to a little girl." From Luke. Jesus called them unto him and said, "Suffer little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for of such is the kingdom of God. Verily I say unto you, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child shall in no wise enter therein." Number 104. Mrs. Eddy was known to help even those that did their best to harm her. One such account is her healing of a student, George Berry, of tuberculosis. He later attempted to bring suit against her for alleged damages. From Matthew. Ye have heard that it hath been said, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy." But I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. And pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. Number 105. Another instance where Mrs. Eddy had to rise above the attacks of former students was recounted in the Choate Reminiscences. The following makes reference to a fabricated suit against her husband for murder. Something of what the episode cost her is suggested in an incident recorded by Clara Choate. Mrs. Eddy had just returned to Lynn from all day in the courtroom in Boston, obviously ill. She left Mrs. Choate and Miranda Rice in the sitting room, but a little while later passed through the room again, her face pale, blood on her lips, and shakily bearing in her hands a basin with blood in it. The two women ran forward to her, but she motioned them back, saying, "God can heal me. God can heal me," and went into the next room. Later, she came out again with what Mrs. Choate characteristically described as a sweet, fearless smile, an awe-inspiring countenance. "I knew God would heal me," she told them, "and he has. Now, dear," to Mrs. Choate, "go home, be happy, for all is well, and we can trust God." From Isaiah. The people that walked in darkness have seen a great light. They that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them hath the light shined. Number 106. Twice during my childhood, I was instantly healed through the tender ministrations of our precious leader from what the physicians would have regarded as hopeless physical conditions. From babyhood, I had been an extremely delicate child, with three generations of serious lung trouble as a background on my father's side. On one occasion, previous to going east with my mother, I developed a severe cold which left me with a deep, hollow-sounding cough. As soon as Mrs. Eddy heard the cough, she quickly detected the seriousness of the condition and gave me one treatment, which was all I needed to eradicate completely every vestige of the lung difficulty. The rasping cough ceased at once, and not only did this distressing condition yield, but the whole mortal law which lay back of the trouble was broken. And through the years that followed, I have rejoiced in complete freedom from any return of this so-called family inheritance. Number 107. Confirmations of Mrs. Eddy's grand love for all was exemplified in the healings manifested during her preaching. One account of this appears in Retrospection and Introspection. Our last vestry meeting was made memorable by eloquent addresses from persons who feelingly testified to having been healed through my preaching. Among other diseases cured, they specified cancers. The cases described had been treated and given over by the physicians of the popular schools of medicine. But I had not heard of these cases till the persons who divulged their secret joy were healed. A prominent churchman agreeably informed the congregation that many others present had been healed under my preaching, but were too timid to testify in public. One memorable Sunday afternoon, a soprano, clear, strong, sympathetic, floating up from the pews, caught my ear. When the meeting was over, two ladies, pushing their way through the crowd, reached the platform. With tears of joy flooding her eyes, for she was a mother, one of them said, "Did you hear my daughter sing? Why, she has not sung before since she left the choir and was in consumption. When she entered this church 1 hour ago, she could not speak a loud word. And now, oh, thank God, she is healed." It was not an uncommon occurrence in my own church for the sick to be healed by my sermon. Many pale cripples went into the church leaning on crutches, who went out carrying them on their shoulders. And these signs shall follow them that believe. From Science and Health. Our Master taught no mere theory, doctrine, or belief. It was the divine principle of all real being which he taught and practiced. His proof of Christianity was no form or system of religion and worship, but Christian Science, working out the harmony of life and love. Jesus sent a message to John the Baptist, which was intended to prove beyond a question that the Christ had come. "Go your way and tell John what things ye have seen and heard, how that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, to the poor the gospel is preached." In other words, tell John what the demonstration of divine power is, and he will at once perceive that God is the power in the messianic work. Number 108. One of Boston's early practitioners told me that a number of years ago he went to Lynn with several people who had come to the annual meeting. He was pointing out to one Westerner a very old house, when an elderly gentleman passing offered to show them a much older house. This man, a Mr. Green, in the course of conversation asked if they had come on to the annual meeting, and being answered in the affirmative, told them the following story. Years before in Lynn, Mrs. Eddy called at his house looking for a room. His wife said they could not let her have a room because they had a sick daughter in the house who was dying of consumption. Mrs. Eddy went upstairs to the daughter, and he and his wife could remember nothing that happened after that till they saw Mrs. Eddy and their daughter walk in the front door. He and his wife were in a kind of daze and had not seen them go out. It was a cold, raw day, but the daughter was completely healed when she returned from the walk. They rented a room to Mrs. Eddy, but a neighbor woman told his wife some tales against our leader and said she was a dangerous woman, so Mrs. Green would not let Mrs. Eddy come. Imagine, after saving the child's life, they would not so much as rent her a room. Mrs. Eddy left him Science and Health, which he put in his bookcase. Some time after this, Mr. Green was suffering from nervous prostration, and it occurred to him to read the book our leader left. He read and woke up well the next morning. Later, he had a running sore on his arm, which had to be dressed daily. One day, he decided to try and heal it by reading the book. He read and was healed. His wife got an attack of asthma, which went on for some time, to the disturbance of the whole household. He decided to read her well, without saying anything to her about it. He read the book again, and she was completely healed. But his wife and one of his daughters, not the one who was healed, remained opposed to Christian Science. It is possible that this healing is the same as recounted in historical papers by Judge Clifford P. Smith, although the healing there was of brain fever, even though the date was similar and the name of the young girl was Josephine Green, daughter of Mr. and Mrs. C.E.L. Green. From Matthew. If I cast out devils by the Spirit of God, then the kingdom of God is come unto you. Number 109. In a reminiscence related by Calvin A. Fry, C.S.D., Mrs. Eddy's secretary for 28 continuous years, one can see the power she commanded when she relied totally on God. During my first preaching in Boston, I, Mrs. Eddy, had this experience. K., Richard Kennedy, one of her first students who later turned on her in a relentless barrage of attacks, influenced young men to go to church where I preached, Dr. Williams Church, corner of Shawmut Avenue and Madison Street, Baptist Tabernacle, and disturb the service. As soon as service had well begun, they, having taken seats in front, would get up one at a time and go out of church just to disturb the meeting. Finally, Dr. Williams, seeing their intention, placed himself inside the door. And when they began to go out, he rose and locked the door and ordered them to their seats, threatening them with arrest for disturbing the services. After that stopped, one day as I was preaching, a stone came crashing through the glass and fell at my side, upon which a venerable gentleman arose and implored me not to attempt to go on with the service. I replied that I feared no harm and called upon them to stand still and see the salvation of God. Then, of a sudden, a heavy thunderbolt burst, which shook the house, and members of the audience say that they saw the lightning playing all around me. At the same time, my voice was heard above it all, saying, "He uttered his voice, the earth melted." Psalms 46, verse 6. During this time, there were no clouds to be seen in the sky. We were never more troubled with any attempts to thus disturb the meetings. From Luke. The days will come when ye shall desire to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and ye shall not see it. And they shall say to you, "See here," or "See there." Go not after them, nor follow them. For as the lightning that lighteneth out of the one part under heaven, shineth unto the other part under heaven, so shall also the Son of Man be in his day. But first must he suffer many things, and be rejected of this generation.